from newstalkzb.co.nz, it's the Mike Hosking Breakfast with BNZ.
G'day there, and welcome to the rewrap for Monday. All the best bits from the Mike Hosking Breakfast on News Talk ZB in a sillier package. I am Glenn ZB, and this morning, Mike's fears about unions, well, they might amount to nothing, as the cracks start to show already with some of the Labour coalition situation. The idea for rental property warrants of fitness also cracking up a little bit. The JFK files, a little review on exactly what was released, and the Mrs. Hosking chip tax to tell you about. Before any of that, yes, some of the Labour policies, not everybody seems to be on board.
Also over the weekend, we seem to have confusion now, or possibly a back down on the foreign house buyers promise. Foreigners are banned. Question was raised, of course, throughout the campaign as to just how realistic that approach was given the TPP and the Korea Free Trade Deal. I mean, this country has never gone back on a trade deal yet, and given we need someone like Korea more than they need us, how was all of this foreign house buying thinking going to get implemented without getting them upset? Well, the suggestion is it's no longer a ban. Apparently, it's maybe something like a stamp duty, which, of course, isn't a ban. It's a tax. Now, if that's what they're going to do, we've got a problem, and the problem is it doesn't work. And it works to the extent that it brings in revenue to the government, of course, but it's also potentially a broken promise given they specifically said there were no new taxes this term outside the ones they talked about during the campaign, and a stamp tax wasn't one of them. Also in Australia, where they tried something similar, made no difference. If the aim is to slow house sales and prices, the Australian laws, which also include a ban on foreigners buying established homes, they could only build new, didn't change a thing. So what is needed at this early stage, of course, is clarity. The risk a new government takes in a mad rush to look like they're busy in the first 100 days, remembering 100 days doesn't actually mean anything, it's a made-up marketing concept, but the risk they take is they look confused and they're sending out too many mixed messages. So hopefully some clarity with Jacinda Ardern at 7:35.
And you can, of course, hear that interview with Jacinda Ardern on our website, on the NewsTalkZB website. Right now, unions. This is another thing that Mike was worried about, their influence over the Labour Party. But is it starting to wane? Here's how he sees it.
Geography is one of those issues in some parts of the country. I mean, there simply isn't that much work. Enter the regional fund. Despite the fact there might not be a lot of industry, or maybe there could be a skill mismatch, the simple reality is there is always stuff to do. And why on earth aren't we taking the people with little to do but a state check in their hand and getting them to contribute? It is sensible, it's logical, it's practical, it benefits the region, it benefits hopefully the individual and the state gets something back for their money. Who knows, it might even lead somewhere long term. But the unions, they want none of it. Why? Because the unions don't want much of anything, short of less work for more money and better conditions. Surely we cannot miss the irony of a Labour government introducing policy that's at odds with the unions. I mean, if the unions, the group that have such an influence on the party, the unions who have a massive say on who the leader of the party is, they were the ones behind Andrew Little getting the top job. If they're out of step with Labour, you really have to ask just who they're in step with and whether their thinking isn't a bit 1931. Working for the dole is quid pro quo. There is no free lunch, or there shouldn't be. State money isn't a one-way street. If we can get a few people out of bed and making an effort in the regions, the regional fund is off to a very good start.
Yeah, it's disappointing about that no free lunches thing. That's certainly a policy I would have got behind. Not sure who was voting for rental warrants of fitness, but only two people took them up in Wellington, and one of them failed.
Here's my favourite story of the day. You know the Wellington, I mentioned this last week, you know the Wellington City Council's come up with this voluntary rental warrant of fitness test, right? And the last time I told you about the story, and this is from my classic theory versus reality file, and the theory is not a bad idea, I suppose, in the grand scheme of things. In reality, it'll never work. So sure enough, they introduce it, first council in the country to do it, for a rental warrant of fitness test. And last time I mentioned this on the program, there were, I told you how many people had signed up for their voluntary rental warrant of fitness test, and the answer was two. Two landlords had signed up for this particular one, and we find out this morning that one of them, Joseph Williams, actually failed the test. So of the two people who signed up, 50% of them have now failed the test. And he's complaining about the test. He says the test is shonky, it's ridiculous, the report was poorly written, it had spelling errors, He paid $200, and this guy's just trying to do the right thing. So he's a good landlord. He's just trying to do the right thing.
Is he claiming that? Is he claiming that fail and pass have been misspelled on his test?
No, he's not. No, he's not claiming that. But he did, because I can tell you why he failed, and I'm going to tell you in just a couple of moments. $250 for the inspection. I would have thought the council would have paid for that, to be honest. I mean, if you've got a scheme and it's clearly not working, given there are only two landlords out of all of Wellington that have signed up, surely you'd stump up for the $250 and try and encourage people to get into it. But no, he paid his $250 to Joseph, and he failed. He failed because the porch light wasn't working. That's your $250. I don't know what you were thinking, Joseph. Change the porch light would have been a lot cheaper than paying $250. And you pass your...
Actually, that's tricky, isn't it? Because outside lights, they are prone to your water damage,
yes,
aren't they?
Yes.
You get a bit of water in the outside light. That's a short circuit right there.
A lot of insects. Also, he had a couple of window fittings needed security stays. Point of this is, if you're going to come up with a theoretical idea that you want to, you know, have people embrace, don't be a dick about it. The moment you're a dick about something, people go, "Why?" Every landlord listening to this in the country this morning is going to go, "Why would I bother dealing with idiots like the Wellington City Council, for goodness sake?"
No dickheads!
Exactly.
Yes, always a reminder, we run a strict no dickheads policy on the Mike Hosking Breakfast. Yeah, they are tricky, the outdoor lights. Water got into one of mine, and every time we tried to turn it on, it would blow a fuse. So I just disconnected it. And now it's dark outside. Not dark, romantic. That's the line I'm going with there. Now, the JFK files were released. Unfortunately, no real bombshells there. So we forgot about that pretty quickly.
I can't say I read all the files over the weekend, Richard, but from my perusal...
Oh, 28,000 you didn't?
Exactly.
What else were you doing? What is your excuse? Dog ate your homework? Come on there, Mike.
There was a few sex parties, there was a plot to kill Castro, but there's no smoking gun.
Gotta love this stuff, right? No big reveal that changes the general outline that Lee Harvey Oswald was the key culprit responsible for the assassination. But Kennedy writer Phil Shenham says what still is left to be revealed perhaps is material that taints U.S. intelligence agencies during the time, 6 weeks before the assassination, when Oswald was off in Mexico.
He's meeting with Cuban spies and Russian spies and other people who may have wanted to see Kennedy dead. And we know, too, that the CIA had Oswald under aggressive surveillance while he's in Mexico City. And apparently Oswald, during this trip, may have talked openly about killing Kennedy. You have to wonder if people at the CIA didn't know that and if they didn't fail to share that information with Washington.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good, would it? Meantime, we have heard, yes, about CIA plots in the past to kill Castro. Many more are revealed in one of these documents, part of the news stash. It is not only exploding cigars that we've heard about for years and years. One plan was to get Mafia boss Sam Giancana to arrange for a hit, and as part of the bid to woo the Mafia man, the CIA agreed to bug the Las Vegas hotel suite of his mistress to try to get Giancana on side when the Mafia chief thought she was having an affair with some others. Another was to get Castro a diving suit where the breathing apparatus was contaminated with tuberculosis bacilli, but someone else gave Castro a new diving suit first, so scratch that plan. Yet another was to use a mini submarine to place an exploding seashell in an area where Castro liked it. This is my favorite. Where he liked to dive. A shell that would be so exotic, so enticing. He would be drawn to it, but apparently at the time they had trouble getting enough explosives into that shell. Castro is said to have survived more than 800. You've got to give it some marks for creativity, right?
Yep.
More than 800 assassination attempts before Castro's death in November of last year from natural causes.
Yeah, he's very Maxwell Smart.
Don't you just hate it when you try to give somebody, you're planning to give them a poison diving suit and then somebody else gives them a new diving suit, and suddenly you've got you've got a poison diving suit that you've got nobody to give to. So annoying. Hey, Mike spent the weekend in Cambridge watching some rowing. You also went to the pub.
Cambridge, absolutely fantastic. Went to Good Union. Is it Good Union? Was Good Union there? Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the Good George establishments, of course.
Exactly.
A great.
Oh, fantastic! Making their own
a great
beer.
Craft brewing.
Oh, fantastic!
Success story.
Got the craft beer. I ordered too many chicken wings, though, as it turns out, because you have the option of the 6 chicken wings or the 12 chicken wings.
Yeah, 6 is not enough.
Well, it turns out for me it was. And then we ordered the plate of 12, and then we also ordered the pork sliders, and there was something else we ordered and some chips, and it was just a, oh.
Was Mrs. Hosking with you?
She was with us. And
oh, well, you can never order too many chips. It's been my experience. If Mrs. Hosking is with you...
Kids were there.
You need to order the amount of chips that you want and then sort of add to that. It's like a tax, isn't it, when you have a meal with Mrs. Hosking? There's a chip tax which you have to pay.
It's one of those taxes that's very, very difficult to calculate too, the chip tax. Because, of course, it's not just Mrs. Hosking. It's most people's missuses who demand to be paid that chip tax. And although it seems like no matter how you calculate it, you've never calculated quite enough, and they will usually eat more chips than you were expecting them to, and you end up feeling like you haven't had quite enough. That certainly seems... I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying how it is. That's just life. I am Glenn ZB. That was the rewrap for Monday. We'll wrap up some more chips for you tomorrow.